music store where I'd heard the music years before. But the man there said the music wouldn't play. And
in the streets, we're going to talk about that man there who would not let the music play, and his name is Bill Graham. There's a rock and roll exhibit going on now at the Holocaust Museum in Skokie. It's kind of a strange fit, so we've welcomed Ariel Weininger, who is the chief curator of collections and exhibitions for the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. Welcome. How are you, Ariel?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
All right. Thinking about rock and roll, this guy, Bill Graham, was a concert promoter extraordinaire, responsible for huge names in the world of rock and roll, the Grateful Dead, Jimi Hendrix, The Who, The Rolling Stones. I think it would be easier to say who didn't he promote.
Right. He really did everything. He's known very much as being a promoter, but he also was a manager at points in time during his career. He did whole tours for groups like The Rolling Stones. He did two major tours for The Rolling Stones. He did a huge amount of benefit concerts, which is something else that we talk about in the exhibition. But he's very well known for this, the rock portion of his life. What he is not so well known for, but the exhibition reveals to people who know him but don't know this early history, is that he was a refugee from the Holocaust. He's a Holocaust survivor. He lost family in the Holocaust. His mother, his sister, both died in Auschwitz. And one of his sisters survived Auschwitz, and she actually eventually made her way to America, just as Bill Graham made his way to America. Mm-hmm. He was in the Bronx. He was fostered in the Bronx. But his sister got married and moved to the San Francisco area, and that's how the famous movement of Bill Graham from the New York area to San Francisco happens.
Did he talk at all about this past during his business career? Is this something that ever came up, or did he keep it hidden?
No, he was very private about that point in time. Even his sons will say that. They knew general information, but he really didn't talk about it. And in fact, one of the most interesting things in the exhibition is that while researching, there was a predecessor exhibition to this, a very small one that was done in San Francisco by the Bill Graham Foundation. And they wanted to find out more about his childhood. And they looked and looked online, and eventually they found a childhood friend of his who made the entire movement that he made from Berlin to France, down to Spain and Portugal, to the boat, to America, to being fostered in the New York area in the Bronx. And then they lost touch. This friend of his, Ralph Moratz, who has three videos that are on display in the exhibition, he lived in the L.A. area, but he knew Bill Graham as Wolfgang Grajonka.
His original name.
His original name.
Yeah.
And so he went looking for his friend, Wolfie, and he couldn't find him. Eventually, he found out that he had changed his name to Bill Graham. And by that point in time, unfortunately, Ralph was looking for him in 1992, and Bill was killed in a helicopter crash in 1991. So they never reunited.
Sad, yet so fascinating of a story. You mentioned his sons. This exhibit opened mid-July, and his sons, I believe David and Alex, were there for the grand opening, and they brought some of the stuff that they had collected that were their father's.
The exhibition features just about 400 objects. The major lender to the exhibition are the Graham sons, so David and Alex. These were Bill's private items that he had from all of the bands that he worked with, from all of his own history. A lot of it was actually sort of secondary items that were given to him because in 1985, something else he was very well known for was that Reagan was supposed to visit the Bitburg Cemetery. I don't know if your listeners are recall this point in time, but it was on the 40th anniversary of the end of World War II, and Helmut Kohl and Reagan were going to be together and show that there was reconciliation. Reagan was supposed to visit and did visit a cemetery in Germany in Bitburg. 47 SS officers were buried there. So there were a number of people in the United States, including Bill Graham, who said that it was not appropriate for an American president to lay a wreath at this cemetery. Because of that, Bill had a big protest in San Francisco, and after putting out publications or ads in newspapers saying that he shouldn't do this, his offices were firebombed by neo-Nazis. So the Bill Graham Presents offices were firebombed. Much of the collection was lost. So a lot of the objects that you see on display, because Bill kept all of these posters from the 60s, from the 70s, in his office, much of what you see on display were actually things that were given back to Bill Graham in the years subsequent to the fire so that he could have all of these memories again. So, nearly 400 objects are on display. Posters, there's costumes.
Talk about the Grateful Dead poster you were telling us
right.
about.
The first poster where the Grateful Dead are known by the name of the Grateful Dead. It says right underneath, formerly the Warlocks, mm-hmm. is on display in the exhibition. There are guitars. There are a jacket of Jimi Hendrix is on display. Two outfits of Bill Graham's from the famous Grateful Dead New Year's Eve concerts are on display, mm-hmm. where he's won a butterfly and at another point in time, Father Time. There are also really sort of amazing objects that aren't only final rock and roll posters from the Fillmore, but the original artworks that these psychedelic artists made in San Francisco in the 60s, which was something that Bill really promoted, this whole world around gig posters that we now have. A lot of that came out of the Fillmore and Bill Graham's promotion of it. So
many of these items never before on display, right?
Never before on display till this exhibition.
Right.
But for us here in the Chicago area, there are actually three items on display that have never been on display before. We worked closely with the Bill Graham Foundation, and three items have been lent from the Garcia, from Jerry Garcia's family, an amp from 1972-73, a set list of the Grateful Dead, and a lyric sheet where you can see Jerry made some crossouts and changed some of the lyrics to a song called He's Gone, which all deadheads will know.
Yeah.
So those three items are on display here for the first time ever outside of the Garcia family collection.
I just went to the Rolling Stone Exhibitionism exhibit. That was fantastic. Focusing, obviously, just on the Rolling Stones. This, to me, sounds so amazing. There is a guitar that Pete Townsend used to play Tommy at the Metropolitan Opera House in New York City. The suit Peter Frampton wore for Frampton Comes Alive. I love rock and roll, and I love music, and to me, this is going to be amazing, but also to learn the other side of Bill Graham that most of us didn't know.
Yeah, it's a really, really rich show in terms of the rock history that you learn about, the objects that you get to see, but also this very personal story of one person who survived what happened in Europe, was orphaned, came here, was fostered, but really had to find his way in the world on his own. I think that's why a lot of people might know that Bill had a very tough personality is probably the nicest way to say it. And I think that all of that draws from this childhood where he really had to stand on his own two feet and make his own way in the world.
He was a master promoter, but where did his love and appreciation of music come from? Is that easily traced?
Yeah, he apparently he was very, very connected to Latin music. That really was his love. And it was one of the reasons that he very much promoted and really created the career of Carlos Santana.
Mm-hmm.
And that comes from the fact that when he was young, he was in the New York area. He was going down to the Palladium. He actually won a dance concert there. He was a very good Latin dancer.
Mm. Wow.
And then he just prior to and after he was drafted and served in Korea as a non-citizen, he was not a citizen at that point in time, he worked in the Catskills. He worked in the Jewish Catskill resorts.
Wow.
He worked at Grossinger's and he worked at the Concord.
Yeah.
And there, at that point in time, a lot of the bands that would perform were these Latin bands. And so he would see them and he would hear them. And there's another story that Harry Belafonte was playing at one of the hotels, and he went to the hotel. It was his girlfriend's birthday that night, and he went up to him and he said, "Mr. Belafonte, it would really be incredible if you could come and say, you know, happy birthday to my girlfriend. We are in the staff houses," and and he of course forgot about it. Thought that, you know, Harry Belafonte, there's no way he's going to do it. At 1 a.m. there was a knock on the door, and Harry Belafonte showed up and hung out for the rest of the night with the staff that had worked
That's
at the
impressive.
Daylight come and we want to go home. We're talking to Arielle Weininger. She is the chief curator and collections and exhibitions for the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. This exhibit runs until November 12th. I have got to get over there. So do you. There is a website. What's the best place to tell people to go to find out all the details?
ilholocaustmuseum.org.
Quick break. We'll return. 312-981-7200 is the number to call. It's Bill Leff, Wendy Snyder, 720 WGN.
Red in a drain ditch, caught on a limb. You know better, but I know him.
I always say I'm not a deadhead, and I'm not a deadhead.
Until...
But I enjoy the music.
Sure.
I just don't like it rammed down my throat from my husband.
I just wish the songs were longer. That's my complaint with the dead music, is the songs are too short.
We've got Arielle Weininger in the studio, chief curator of collections and exhibitions for the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center. What is the address of that?
9603 Woods Road in Skokie, Illinois.
We were just talking off the air. Of course, Lollapalooza ended early yesterday because of the weather, but it's going to go on in full force for the rest of the weekend. And Perry Farrell, instrumental, of course, in bringing us all Lollapalooza. You were telling us something about Perry Farrell and Bill Graham.
Yeah, Perry basically credits Bill with teaching him everything he knew about how to put together a festival, how to give audiences a good experience. That was essential to Bill. And something very different was, you know, when he had the Fillmore West and then East, there were balloons, there were light shows that happened. There was a group that was put together for each show that included rock music, blues music. It was about exposing people to different things and having them have a good and safe experience. He also offered apples. You'll see in the exhibition the original apple barrel that was at the top of the stairs at the Fillmore is in the exhibition. Bill made sure everybody had something to, a little bit of nosh, something to eat before a show.
Was that the idea behind the apples? What's the tie-in with the apples?
So the apples are actually a really interesting story. You know, for a long time, people just knew that it was something that he was doing as a courtesy to make it warm and inviting. And only until the discovery of his childhood friend in the creation of this exhibition, Ralph Moratz, was it a little bit more revealed, and that it's when Bill and Ralph were in France in an orphanage. They would, under Bill's direction, run out from the orphanage at night, and they would go and they would steal apples because there wasn't enough food. And they would steal these apples not only for themselves but for all the other children.
Yeah.
And Ralph explicitly said that even if Bill never talked about it, he knew that the apples at the Fillmore were because of this history.
Yeah.
Apples are not native to California, so it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to offer all of these apples. But that's what he did. So it really has a connection to this childhood that he had during the Holocaust. But Perry Farrell, back to Lollapalooza, Perry Farrell and Bill met in 1991 when Perry Farrell was putting together the first Lollapalooza tour. And he was having apparently some trouble with some of the other promoters in some of the other cities because he had a whole sideshow, if you recall. There were all sorts of different things that were happening in the
Jim
original...
Rose Circus sideshow was definitely part of that.
And so some of the promoters really didn't understand what this was about, and they thought it was too extravagant, and this was wrong, and whatever. And he got to San Francisco, of course, and to Bill Graham, and Bill said, "This is fantastic. This is great," and really encouraged him to have all of these things available for his audiences. And so they formed a nice connection. He became Perry, and Alex Graham became very good friends. And unfortunately, that was the year that Bill died in October of that year. So they only knew each other for a short time, but he really did. Perry says that he really learned how to put on these big kind of festival shows from Bill.
And Bill also did some work with Live Aid, correct?
Yeah. When Live Aid, he was actually in Europe meeting with Bob Geldof about Live Aid when he found out that the Bill Graham Presents offices had been firebombed in San Francisco. But yes, so in the United Kingdom. Bob Geldof produced the concert there. It was supposed to be worldwide. It was going to be in two venues, simulcast. They would go between each. And Bill Graham was the person who produced the United States Live Aid concert, impressive, which was in Philadelphia.
Wow. This is a little inside, but I'm curious. It's a strange mesh of storylines, the Holocaust Museum and the story of a rock promoter. I'm guessing at some point you had to convince somebody that this is a good fit. Did you, or was everybody on board right away?
I think most everybody was on board.
Were they? Good.
Yeah, because, you know, we have associated to us a large number of survivors that thankfully are still with us, yeah, and speak to the students every day, every week. They all have similar stories. They may not have become as famous as Bill Graham, mm-hmm, but all of them have these stories of childhood, and those stories of childhood greatly affect who they became as adults. And also to use that story after your established career to come back and do humanitarian work and fight for social justice, which is very much what Bill did, mm-hmm, is what our survivors do too. So I think people were very excited that there was a way to reach out to a large audience that knows about rock and roll, that might know about Bill Graham, that's connected to the Grateful Dead, and bring them in to learn this.
It broadens the number of people that will, yep, come to the Holocaust Museum.
Exactly.
I know Carlos Santana is in town at Ravinia next Saturday. Have any of the people's works who are featured in this exhibit come to see it?
So in other locations, I know that certain people have come at the opening in Los Angeles, which is where the exhibition premiered. Mickey Hart was there. And then in San Francisco, Bob Weir was there. We do hope, through our connection with the Bill Graham Foundation out in San Francisco, that Carlos will hopefully come
by.
That
would be cool.
It would be great. He's going to be in town for a few days. And as we were talking before the break, there are so many people at shows at Ravinia, at the Old Town School of Folk Music, throughout the city, that are coming in town over the run of the show, that are connected to Bill, because as you said earlier, he really worked with everybody.
You mentioned something about Graham Nash, Graham Nash's significance photograph. You want to talk about that?
Yeah, the end of the exhibition, it closes with an unfortunate, very early death of Bill Graham. And there are photographs of his family, of his loved ones, of his history. And the exhibition actually ends with a beautiful photograph that's of Bill at a family barbecue. And around his neck, he's wearing a Star of David, something he would wear very often. And this beautiful photograph is actually taken by Graham Nash and is owned by David Graham, his son, and they lent it to the exhibition.
I want to quickly bring this full circle. At the very beginning, we played American Pie, Don McLean. So he kind of makes a cameo. He's in,
yeah,
the song for a little bit,
yeah,
right?
He's in the song because this is what they're referencing is the closure of both the, specifically the Fillmore East, but both of the Fillmores. Bill closed them in 1971,
mm-hmm,
and that's the sacred store that he goes down and the man says the music wouldn't play.
Mm-hmm.
Was the closure of those two very, very famous clubs that that really created this whole rock experience that we all benefit from now. All the things that we're used to, light shows and making sure that you as an audience are well attended to and, mm-hmm, feel safe. All of this was really brought to us by Bill.
And he died at 60. I didn't realize he was so young.
He died at 60.
Yes. 1991. Can't wait to see this. Arielle Weininger, and she is the chief curator at the Illinois Holocaust Museum and Education Center, 9603 Woods Road in Skokie.
Yes.
And the website again?
ilholocaustmuseum.org.
This runs through November 12th. You will see me and my family out there.
Great.
Thank you so much.
We'll take a quick break and then a lot more show. Stick around. Bill and Wendy, WGN.